Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Chris Mirabilli. Do you guys like feeling healthy? Do you guys want to live a long life? This might be the episode for you. Chris is the founder and CEO of Novos. He's a serial entrepreneur and longevity expert. Chris's interest in health began when he was 12 years old, evolved into a passion after he was cured of a brain tumor. Chris has dedicated his life and research to integrated longevity practices and inventions into his life for more than 10 years, has achieved a biological age of 13.6 years. So basically he's, you know, right after his bar mitzvah, he's doing okay. Now that's 13.6 younger than his chronological age. That's 37%. What does all this mean? Well, we're going to get into it. And I'm going to get real specific at the end. I'm going to ask him about all these things we've been hearing a lot about lately, all the vitamins and minerals and amino acids and processes and water shock, cold water shock and heat and all kinds of things. And I'm going to go through a litany of these things. And I really wanted to find out what his opinions were, what kind of data he had on these things. Quite interesting. I take a little extra time for this because, hey, look, we all want to feel good. Maybe get a little extra time here, you know? Not a loss. So I thought it was really interesting. Here's a good one. Here is Chris Mirabilli.
All right. I'm here with Chris Mirabilli. I love that name. We were talking on the pregame. It's just tell everybody real quick what that name means, or a variation of the name.
You're going to make me start with that. I'm going to sound like a jerk, like a total arrogant.
I'm the one that's telling you to say it because I think that it's unique. And you know, he's Italian, you know, it's Mirabilli is a very, you know, original name. I'm a namesmith.
Right. Okay. All right. So Mirabilli is Latin derived from Mirabilis, which is it means essentially wonderful or amazing, full of wonder, essentially. So as I mentioned, I tease my girlfriend about that I'm, you know, Chris full of wonder, but she doesn't really give me anything with that.
I can tell Chris is a modest guy. I wanted him to say that he is the epitome of what you would think it'd be. We're going to talk about longevity. I said right from the beginning, you're looking fresh. You're looking, you know, really, you know, seems like he's a nice guy. So I just wanted to say, but I thought your name was unique. So I wanted to kind of start off that way. Let's get into it. Let's find out what kind of built you, how you got into this. And then I want to get into some heavy duty nooks and crannies and all those interesting little nuggets. And then I want to emphasize on one thing, like people find out what they should do, but then they don't do it. And that's the right difference between longevity and not longevity. So that's an interesting subject. We're going to get into all that, but tell us where you're from. Tell us about mom and dad. Why health? What happened there? Talk to us.
Sure. So I grew up in Long Island, New York, about 30 minutes outside of New York City. So I had enough, contact with New York City and the hustle and bustle and entrepreneurship and success and so on. But I was far enough away to have a more calm, traditional childhood. I always had an interest in science. In fact, when I was about 7 years old, 8 years old, I wanted to be a geologist. And then when I was about 10 years old, I wanted to be a physicist. And then when I was about 13 years old, I wanted to be a professional baseball player.
Completely
went off track. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I realized that about 16, 17, I wasn't going to be a MLB player, then I focused more on technology, and I taught myself how to program websites, that is. And I got a job during the tech boom of the late 90s at a New York City company. And by programming there while in high school, I started to see what the entrepreneurial life is like, and inventing things and creating things and bringing them to the market, and the challenges that it presents, but the excitement and thrill too. And that's when I knew that I probably wanted to become an entrepreneur. And I applied to one single school, which fortunately I got into, which was NYU Stern. I wanted to stay in New York, be close to the family, be in the city that I loved. And it was for undergrad, the best business school in New York. And so I studied finance, economics, and international business there. And then eventually, launched my career. I spent 1 year in private equity banking, but essentially I realized I'm not a banker. That's not what I like. And wanted to start a company, and I did. But going back to your question about health and you know, what led me to where I am now, I would say one major thing that I left out of the story was when I was 16 years old, I suddenly had a seizure while in New York City. I was on a school trip and I woke up with blood all over my chest. And it was because I had severed my tongue from a seizure. They rushed me to the emergency room and they came to learn that I had a brain tumor. So a large mass, a pilocytic astrocytoma on my left temporal lobe. So right next to all of my sensory areas of the brain and right next to my memory center and so on. And so kind of knocked me off track. Up to that point, I was very physically active. I was in the gym every day since I was 12 years old. I was eating a healthy diet, so to speak, from an early age. And so it was a shock to me that despite all of the effort I was making to be healthy, that I still was struck by a brain tumor. And so that experience planted the seed into me, which has flowered into what Novos, my current company, is now today, many years later. But essentially that I wanted to do everything I could to prevent any sort of illness like this from occurring ever again in my life, while also maximizing what I get out of life. So I said so much there. I'll pause for a second.
That is awesome. What a heck of an origin story there with that. Wait, real quick. Well, I always ask this everybody because sometimes it gives me ideas of what built somebody, sometimes doesn't. What did your mom and dad do for a living?
Well, my mother worked prior to her having my brother, and my brother's a couple of years older than me. So I was very close. My brother and I were both very, very close with my mother. She unfortunately passed away from pancreatic cancer right when I was starting my company. And so it made it all the more important to me to launch this business. And I've dedicated my business and the success that we hope to achieve to my mother and in her memory, and to try to prevent others from having the same fate that she did. My father, he was a school teacher prior to my brother being born, but then realized he needed to make more money to try to provide the life for the family that he wanted to provide. So he studied finance and then essentially became a financial advisor and sold insurance as well. So, and he did that for a company at first. And then by the time I was around 10 or 12 years old, then he broke away and started his own company in that space.
So when you're working in the financial sector, I think, you know, that's what you would call it. So how do you segue into health? What does this journey look like?
Well, so it's actually a lot more that happens in between. So I studied, you know, as I mentioned, finance was one of my majors in school, and I went into private equity. And at the same time, I was launching a startup, which was a technology startup. It was a social network called Hotlist. My friend and I, we won NYU's business plan competition. We were the first undergraduates to do it. It was a grad school competition that we entered and somehow won it. And that was our calling. And so I quit my job. It was a lucrative, high-paying job on Park Avenue, right in front of the Ferrari dealership. I remember leaving and seeing the Ferraris, and in my, you know, cocky 21-year-old self, I was like, you're going to be mine soon, looking at the Ferraris. And things were far, far more difficult than I expected. And that did not transpire, but I started this business, scaled it to over 100 million people's social plans. We were all about showing you what's happening around you in your city, anywhere in the world. So we partnered with Facebook and we aggregated so much data that we were able to show you, even if you were traveling to Florence for the weekend, you could see what the hot spots were in Florence and people who were expected to go to those places based on RSVPs to different events and so on. So it was an amazing journey. It was a roller coaster up and down. I was at one point at a peak, I was opening NASDAQ stock market. I was plastered all over Times Square billboards. And, you know, another day I was, the business was imploding from not enough capital and a acquisition that never actually ended up taking place, despite promises that it would. So ups and downs of entrepreneurship, very, very, you know, I learned a tremendous amount during that period. And that was my early to mid-20s.
Wow, you would think with 100 million accounts, was it?
So, yeah, well, not 100 million users on our platform, but 100 million people's data. We have millions of people on the platform, but then it was actually a multiple of that in terms of the data that we could display to users. So if you were on the platform, to you, it would seem like there were hundreds of millions of people on the platform.
Right. And an interesting concept, a niche that seems like it would come in pretty handy still to this day. And I'm trying to think of, like, you know, in an event driven, you know, kind of like a Uber event, you know, what's happening right now. Sounds pretty nifty to me.
Many have tried to replicate it. Many entrepreneurs have contacted me over the years saying, hey, I'm trying to start a new hot list. I loved what you had built. Will you advise, or what do you think of this? And so, yeah, it's a nut that needs to be cracked. I have an idea of how I would do it today if I were to launch it today, but I'm now distracted by something I care more about.
Right. So, and how do we get there from here in the story?
Yeah. So so I mentioned that there is this potential acquisition. We were being looked at by big companies like Google and Facebook, ultimately there was a company in Asia that was interested in acquiring us. And we did the due diligence process while we were also short on cash, because it wasn't a profitable business, as most tech ventures, social networks are. You focus on building up the platform and the users and the usage of it, and you worry about monetization after that, because it's a race to really just build that product out and acquire the users. And so we followed that playbook, but that meant we were short on capital, and we had a choice of either raising another round or going through with the acquisition. And the acquisition was high enough, the dollar value, for us to choose that acquisition. Unfortunately, the company, after about 3 to 4 months of due diligence, they said, thank you for all of this information. We're going to try to create our own version of Hotlist here, and we'll check back in with you in a year to see how things are going. And you can imagine how my heart had sunk on that call. At the same time, I was in Florida. I lived in New York City, but I was in Florida because my apartment building was flooded during Hurricane Sandy. So the city said it was unsafe and unsuitable to live in because of the electronics and the radiator and so on. So we had to evacuate. And so I wasn't in my home by myself in Florida for about a month at this point, get this news, only to then return back to my apartment about a week or so later to find that it was robbed. And so if it wasn't enough that my business, that I had poured my whole life into, I had sacrificed a higher income, all of the money I had, I invested into it. So I basically had $0 to my name. Then any possessions I had were also taken. And I was in the newspaper for that. So I had gone from this high of being, you know, on the news and television and stuff for the entrepreneurship to being in it because my apartment was robbed. And it was a story that the New York Post wanted to run for Hurricane Sandy. So, you know, it completely that period was a difficult period, but a transformative period. I would say on the order of magnitude of the brain tumor, but a very different type of experience.
Right. Sure. The both the hitting the fronts of security, you know. So once again, though, how does this go into, you know, your journey into longevity and health and you know, because that's a long journey. That's an amazing amount of data, research, and tell us, you know, how does that happen?
Yeah, I should probably answer your question.
I'm glad you explained the other thing, because that's a nice long shot story, and that's why we're here, to find out your challenges and, you know, what led up to this point. But I believe me, if there's anything else along the way, because I love hearing this stuff, you know. But I'm dying to know, you know, the other part as well. But we, you know, now What happens after that though? Well, you know, you're sitting there, you've been in the newspaper for the company that you were going to try to take public or sell or whatever, you know, you wanted to take public, and then you said, fine, we're going to sell it. Did they sign an NDA?
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't Chinese, though, not far from China. Companies can sign NDAs. Ultimately, they don't really go that far, especially over international waters. So and plus when you're a company that doesn't have much budget to even pay your employees anymore, right, how are you going to take action? So
right. That makes sense. Yeah. So now what do you do? This article comes out. You're at this low point financially, emotionally, spiritually. You're having a tough time. What do you do then?
Yeah, well, so on a personal basis, I really spent a lot of time with self-reflection and became more spiritual, not in like the religious sense of spirituality, but like just more in touch with myself and what I want for my life. I through a series of events of happenstance and serendipity, I came across the work of this Indian spiritualist named Jiddu Krishnamurti, whose work I read. And essentially the message in it was not to follow gurus, not to look externally for answers, look internally for your answers, and to question everything in your life. Like, why do you hold the values that you do? Why do you believe the things you do? And so with that mindset, which I never had in my life previously, it was kind of like peeling back the onion of all of these layers. Like, well, why did I want to be successful with this company? Why? What was driving me? Was it money? Why is money important? What do I hope to actually get from that money? Is it influence? Is it popularity? Like all of these types of questions starting to ask myself, and then trying to understand what the real motivations are, what do I truly care about in life? And then it helped to like center me and balance me. And a lot of the things that I came to realize through that years later made its way into what I now have with Novos, which is a company. It's a human longevity company focused on slowing down the rate at which we age so we can be younger for longer, as we say. But that really truly speaks to me, because I started getting interested in health when I was 12 years old. I was struck by a brain tumor and more recently lost my mother to cancer. So this is something that it is the ultimate, most important thing in my life is health for myself, for my loved ones, and for the world at large. Because like I know how much pain it brings not only to the person going through the illness, the sickness, or the process of death, but the loved ones as well, right? And anything I can do to try to lessen that or slow it down or reduce it or extend the amount of time people can spend on this earth happy and in good health and so on, there's nothing more important to me than that. And so that experience when I was in my mid to late 20s and that self-reflection, a lot of that has carried over about a decade later. I'm in my late 30s. I'm almost 40. Has carried over into my venture now.
And what did you start to do once you come to that realization? Say this is the direction I want to go into. You know, what kind of research did you do, and what were some of the milestones?
Yeah, well, so I didn't immediately go into the field of longevity. In fact, the field of longevity wasn't really at what it is today. Back then, it was starting to pick up back then. And it's been an exponential growth since then, about 8-9 years ago. I, first of all, needed to make money. I had no money to my name. Right. So I started doing some consulting for startups and helping a friend start a company. So he considered me a co-founder. I considered myself a consultant, but I did that for a few years. And then eventually I ended up starting a company just because the opportunity fell in my lap. It wasn't something I was passionate about, but it was in commercial real estate technology, and built a platform that our first clients were Brookfield and Blackstone, which are the two largest commercial landlords in the world, about $500 billion worth of commercial real estate. and started to build that up, had an opportunity to join a company that was merging us. And it was a, you know, lucrative pay package, but it wasn't for me. And that was the moment that I decided to step away. And that was when I was finally able to work on something in the field of health that I had been interested in since I was 12. So how did I decide to go into longevity specifically? When I, about like maybe 8-9 years ago, there was a paper published in a prestigious journal called Cell. And the paper was called the 9 Hallmarks of Aging. And this study had looked at hundreds of other scientific studies and categorized them and essentially provided the biological reasons for why animals, including humans, get older. And so researchers then were looking for ways to try to address these hallmarks or causes of aging one at a time. How can I positively impact this hallmark? And does it then extend the lifespan of the animal that we're studying? And there's a lot of really cool studies that show that, yes, many of these hallmarks, you favorably impact them, and you can extend the health span of the animal and the lifespan of the animal. So this was really intriguing for me because all throughout this time as an entrepreneur, my personal life was really still heavy into health. I was every day at the gym, 6-7 days a week, or out for a run or bicycling. I did triathlons. I was eating healthy diets, experimenting with paleo and keto and everything else in between, experimenting with supplements, doing research on PubMed, which is where you get the actual scientific studies from. So it's something that I was on a personal level, very deep in. And so when I came across this paper as part of my own personal interest, it was like an aha moment for me. Like everything that I had cared about in health throughout my life, this kind of distilled it down, which was like, these are the reasons why things go wrong, why you end up getting cancer, heart disease, diabetes, sarcopenia, which is when you lose muscle mass as you get older, glaucoma, Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's. All of these chronic illnesses, the number one risk factor for them is age. And the reason we age is these biological causes. So it started to make sense to me that, like, for my desire to avoid disease, to live as healthy as I can for as long as I can, and to maximize my, you know, my abilities in my life, like to optimize myself, that this seemed like a really good approach. And so I started digging in more and more into the research. I started going to events. In fact, the first event I went to was coincidental, though my father likes to say that it was a blessing, and you know, we have different philosophies on it. But I was volunteering at NYU Hospital, which is where my brain tumor was removed, with the pediatric ward, because I wanted to give back to the hospital that had essentially saved my life. And one day when I was leaving, I saw a poster on the wall for a mitochondrial summit. And most people would walk right past it and be like, what is mitochondria? Not even care, right? But this excited me. And I saw researchers at the summit whose work and research I was familiar with. So I was like, I have to go to this event. I was probably the only non-PhD or MD at the event. But then I cornered the scientists and asked them about their research and then about specific supplements I was researching that seemed to have favorable impacts on these hallmarks of aging, or things that could impact these hallmarks of aging. And I was surprised by how optimistic these doctors were about these ingredients. I thought that they would say, no, they're natural, over the counter, they're not prescriptions, they don't do anything. But they were very optimistic and bullish about the potential behind these ingredients. So that was my validation point that I needed, that there was something here, that as an entrepreneur, having stepped away from my previous venture and looking for what I wanted to do next for so long, wanting to do something in health, but wanting it to be the right fit, something that I was passionate about, that and that the market really needed, I felt like this was it. And so then I started to bring on some of the scientists who I was communicating with as scientific advisory board members for this new entity that I was creating as a startup. And so to that point, my now company, Novos, we have six official scientific advisory board members from Harvard Medical School, MIT, Salk Institute, world-class geneticists and biologists who, you know, one of whom, for example, his name is Dr. George Church. He invented the first direct genome sequencing method in 1984, essentially inventing genome sequencing in 1984. So these are whales of scientists who I'm very privileged and honored to have as part of our advisory team. And then there's more than a dozen other scientists behind the scenes that we consult with or who work for us, who help us with everything from our formulations to the tests that we create and offer for people and the content and knowledge that we share with people.
Okay. So this will be a fun, you know, time to like kind of go through maybe questions and then get into more sophistication. My questions will be novice, but that'll help us get at that out of the way and get a clearer idea, right?
Sure.
So, and you, this will be fun. So let's talk rapidly throughout these, you know, because this is what we hear lately, intermittent fasting. It's a big thing. What are your thoughts on those?
So first to clarify, a lot of people use intermittent fasting as a term to really describe what's known as time-restricted feeding. So time-restricted feeding, if that's what people are typically referring to, is the idea of eating within a smaller time window each day. So for example, eating only from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. That would be a six-hour eating window, and then you're 18 hours fasted. Intermittent fasting, the official way of thinking of that would be, for example, Monday fast, Tuesday eat, Wednesday fast, Thursday eat. So most people really mean time-restricted feeding. Is it good for you? Yes, 100% is good for you. There's research, a lot in animals, but also some in humans now, showing that you can have much better health outcomes when you eat in smaller eating windows. It can be the same exact food, same amount of calories, and then the people who eat in the smaller window have better health outcomes from weight gain to metabolic markers like triglycerides and blood sugars and so on. A tweak to that is actually, and I'm not as good at this as I would love to be, is to eat earlier in the day. For example, start your day, you wake up, you have breakfast, 9, 10 a.m., and then finish your day eating at maybe 3 or 4 p.m., and then go to sleep with an empty stomach. I'm the reverse. I like to like have coffee in the morning, black coffee, then 12, 1 p.m., I'll start to eat, and then I'll finish by 6, 7 p.m. But, you know, I guess I can't do everything, you know, exactly as it should be. But
about 8 or 9 months ago, I started doing the not eating past 3:45. So I'll eat in the morning and I'll kind of do that. Weekends, perfect. I'm like, I got to let it rip. You know, I like the manja, you know, I like to get in there. You know?
So, right.
But all right. So now aside from water, air, and sleep, we won't even get into that. Cause that's like self-evident. You don't want the water, your water should be clean as possible, you know, clean and alkaline or whatever. And that, you know, but that's simple. And then sleep and then, you know, air clean, breathe good air. Now let's talk about supplements and big thing lately, right? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
NMN is a promising substance. We actually sell it in the form of a product called Novos Boost. Our foundational product is Novos Core, and then Novos Boost is like a booster that you can either take on its own or we recommend in addition to Novos Core. NMN stands for nicotinamide mononucleotide. And the idea behind it is a precursor to another molecule that our bodies need. Every living organism needs it, called NAD+. And when you increase your levels of NAD+, a lot of benefits come. For example, energy levels, helping to produce things called sirtuins, which then can lead to DNA repair and maintenance of the epigenome, which is something related to, both of which are related to longevity, the hallmarks of aging. One is DNA damage, the other is epigenetic dysregulation. So you can favorably impact both of those with it. There are companies that will do NAD injections, not as effective as NMN orally taken. I will back that up with some research in a paper that will come out shortly. But yes, there is value to it. Now, is it a panacea? Is it like this one supplement, you take it and now you're done? There's a famous longevity scientist, published author, who talks a lot about this ingredient on the news and on podcasts and so on. I would say, no, it's not a panacea. It's a value added ingredient, but there's multiple other ingredients for longevity. And so it's, as I put before, it's like a booster. It's something you can take in addition to, but it shouldn't be the only thing you consider for longevity.
Not unlike maybe resveratrol.
So resveratrol is, in my opinion, and that of many scientists who we consult with, an overhyped ingredient that has not lived up to its reputation. There's a more powerful version of resveratrol called terostilbene. So resveratrol, just for the audience to know, is something that got famous because it's contained in red wine. And so when you hear people saying red wine is healthy for you, it's because it was discovered in red wine and it was found in some animal experiments it could extend lifespan. But it hasn't really panned out as well for humans. Now, terostilbene is found in blueberries, and it's a close relative to the grape-derived resveratrol. But it's more powerful. For example, it contains 3 methyl groups. These are attachments to the molecule that then provide fuel for NAD that we were just talking about before. So terostilbene in studies is shown to be very similar to resveratrol, but more powerful. And so between the two, terostilbene is the one that I personally take and would recommend. And I don't care to take resveratrol myself.
You know, side note, because I want to continue this line of question, fun questioning. Side note, though, people say, what are you trying to do? Live forever? You know, to me, this is an art form with great benefits. But to me, it's an art form. Just like, you know, some people want to practice, you know, self-defense or, you know, being a writer or anything else. To me, I see the poeticism in this science and this art form. So just a little disclaimer, everybody. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say it's not about living forever. Of course, you hear every so often about the billionaire who's trying to live forever or become 18 again.
Larry Ellison.
There are many. There are many billionaires and centimillionaires and so on. Very wealthy people who are trying to achieve that. If that's what they want, that's fine. I respect everyone's position. Ultimately, why I'm in this game and why others are in this is really to avoid chronic illness. So imagine if you would normally live until you're 80, but when you're 50, you get your first chronic illness, maybe diabetes. When you're 60, you have a cardiovascular disease. And by the time you're 65 years old, you're not at your prime anymore. So 15 years of like slowly dying, and then you die at 80. What if there was a way for you to make some modest modifications to your lifestyle, like restrict the eating window, replace some of that rice or pizza with vegetables, not overeat, go to bed slightly hungry every night, but not starving, just a little bit hungry every night, be physically active where you're walking, let's just say 45 minutes to an hour each day. Ideally, you weightlift too, but if you don't, and then maybe take some supplements, whether that be for your general health supplements, like the vitamins and minerals that are essential for health. But believe it or not, you don't get enough of it in your food. Even if everything you eat is natural, you're not getting enough in your food. We can talk about why if you care to, but you have your general health supplements to prevent you from dying prematurely. And then you have the longevity health supplements, which is what we specialize in at Novos, to try to extend that health span and that lifespan. So instead of, this is our vision, our goal, instead of getting sick at 65 and passing away at 80, you maybe don't get sick until you're 75 and you pass away at 82 or 83. So you have much more healthy lifespan and you're also living longer.
Right. A couple more supplement questions and then we'll get on to some, sure, like, you know, more, you know, some deeper. DHEA.
So DHEA is a hormone. And so, you know, DHEA is, what I'm going to say is going to spark some controversy in the longevity space. There was a trial done, I believe it was called the TRIM trial, where they what most people don't realize is that as you get older, your immune system practically disappears, or it gets weaker and weaker. And that's part of the reason why so many older people pass away from something like pneumonia, whereas when you're younger, you wouldn't pass away from it. And in this trial, they wanted to see what impact the combination of DHEA, growth hormone, HGH, and a prescription drug metformin used for diabetics would have on the immune system. And they were able to show that it had a favorable effect on the immune system. And it also showed an epigenetic test, which is essentially the biological age, like how old are you biologically as opposed to chronologically. Biological age is more like your disease risk, your mortality risk, and how capable you are biologically. That also reversed slightly from this cocktail. But there's also some controversy around it. Like, for example, androgynous hormones like testosterone, DHEA, and so on, they're all associated with accelerated aging, higher rates of cardiovascular disease, for example, and so on. So for me personally, I don't use DHEA. I know there are some people in the longevity community that do. I don't touch human growth hormone. I don't touch testosterone, TRT. In fact, on our blog, novoslabs.com, if you search TRT or testosterone, you can find a full blog post with lots of scientific references in it for the position that we take. So it's controversial because a lot of people, they confuse feeling younger with actually being biologically younger, or they confuse feeling younger with slowing down the rate of aging. And what if I told you that you can do something that makes you feel younger today, but it actually speeds up the rate at which you age, or it increases the chance that you get sick when you're older? You know, most people don't think that way. They just equate feeling younger with being younger. And that's actually not literally true.
Okay. Well, on that note, there's a couple other questions then. PEMF machines. You know anything about those?
Pulsed electromagnetic field. I'll be honest with you. I am familiar with them. I have tried them, but I'm not intimately familiar with the most recent research. The last time I looked into PEMF was probably 7-8 years ago. So a ton can happen in science in just 1 year. So 7-8 years is like ancient in science. So I wouldn't be honest if I was giving my opinion on it right now. But it seems promising and good.
Yeah, topical for me because I had a pinched nerve when I was working out doing squats. Something I had the past month had a pinched nerve. A friend that sells the machines, a version of the machines, but you know, been selling for like past 17, 18 years. I said, you know, I'll try it. You know, this is just this week. And I guess it might have done something for inflammation or something, you know, the mitochondria. I guess it says that it affects the mitochondria of some sort. I don't know enough about it to, you know, but it seemed like, okay, it feels a little better after 4 days. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. The logic behind it, right? Like electromagnetic fields do impact our human biology. And if you look at the light spectrum, right? So if you consider it almost sounds like science fiction or fake when you first hear it. But when you think about it, it's actually correct. Light, different colors, different spectrums can affect our bodies cellularly differently. And if you're skeptical of what I just said, think about ultraviolet light, right? That is a color that our eyes can't see, but it's there. It is a color. And ultraviolet can lead to vitamin D production, nitric oxide production, skin tanning, skin burning, causes DNA damage, and so on. The other side of the spectrum, you've got infrared. And so there's devices out there that make similar promises to PEMF about like mitochondrial health and speeding up healing and so on. And you've got far infrared, near infrared, and you've got red light. And these are all therapies where the far infrared is something that those waves, ultraviolet is like very fast moving wave, right? Infrared is very slow. And when it's slow like that, it can actually permeate your skin and make its way all the way to your organs. And that's why if you've ever been in a far infrared sauna, you walk in and you're like, this isn't hot. This isn't a sauna. And you sit there for 20 minutes and you're burning hot because the light waves that you can't see are making their way into your organs and warming them up. And then you've got near infrared and red light that have other effects because they're different spectrums that hit different tissues in different ways.
That's fascinating. So I have, everybody makes fun of me because I have talked to somebody, you know, when I first started the show, they were talking about infrared sauna, you know, the kind of like a little portable one that you zipper up yourself into. Right. And everybody makes fun of me. I mean, I'm out here in the 25 minutes north of Austin and Georgetown, Texas. And my wife, well, she thinks it's funny. She sends pictures to people. Look at Mikey sitting in his box, you know, and then everybody makes fun of me. And, I heard great things about infrared, you know, plus it's also freezing here in the winter. So I was like, you know, I'm from LA. So I'm like, I need to warm up. You know, what's interesting about that is that you don't, you feel it warms you up. But then if after like 10 minutes, I'm like, did the temperature just go down or is my, what's happening here? Is there something, cause you just alluded to something like how it, the way, or, you know, first of all, is there any, you know, as far as infrared, are there benefits or is it placebo or what's going on there? And also, does it cool down or does your body adjust? And it seems like it's cooling down.
Yeah. So benefits, yes, there are benefits for both far infrared and near infrared. So near infrared, which we didn't talk about, is one that's closer to the visible light spectrum. If you get a near infrared device and you look at the LEDs on it or the bulbs on it, it looks, you can almost see a hint of red to it. You see something there, but hardly even visible. Whereas far infrared, you don't see anything and you question, is this thing even on, right? And the near infrared can have supposedly improvements for mitochondrial health, potentially for hair regrowth. I believe there are trials done where they make these baseball hats where they have these red light and near infrared lights.
Does the science LEDs substantiate that? Because I'm going to get one today. No, I'm joking. But yeah, no, does science substantiate? That's BBL, right? Broadband light?
I'm not sure if that's what it's referred to as, but maybe. I know it simply as near infrared and
you're probably and using the more sophisticated term than I would, yeah. So, but studies have shown that to be effective.
Is, from what I've come across, yes. Like supposedly as effective as using something like Rogaine, right? Like it's not going to like fix everything and you have to do it every single day. But yes, supposedly it does. Similar...
It works the same way with the DHT is the fault that inhibits the follicle. And that's what too much DHT production, which, you know, the follicles that are on top of your head, because I suffer from this, but that's what kind of like the light kind of inhibits the DHT, or is it a totally different type of mechanism?
I believe it's a different mechanism. I'd have to check, to be honest. I haven't started listening yet, so I haven't dug in as much, but
it's just neuroses. It's not intelligent. No, I'm joking. It's my, you know, but I'm a curious bastard, you know? So when it comes to all these things, I think it's really fun, you know?
Well, for that topic, I mean, there are other things you can do. For example, if you've looked into, platelet rich plasma.
That was my next question. Now what, tell us about that.
So platelet-rich plasma is also known as like vampire facials. I think Kim Kardashian had first like made it famous by having a picture of her like all bloody on her face. Essentially what it is a doctor or a tech will take your blood, spin it up in a centrifuge, and then they'll take the serum that separates. And that is essentially, it's very rich in growth factors. Your own body's growth factors. And so you then get this device, I think it's called a microneedle device. And the microneedle device will then puncture these tiny, tiny holes in your skin. It's not very painful, especially because they usually numb it a little bit with some cream. And then they will take that serum and apply it to your face. And then they will, you know, do the microneedling, and that microneedling ruptures the collagen in the skin a little bit, causes these micro tears. It also then allows that serum to permeate the epidermis and the dermal layer. And then it makes its way deep into your skin. And in this case, into your hair follicles. So it's used for not only for hair and hair regrowth, it's also used just for skin health. And so anyone who has like acne scars, for example, or just skin imperfections, it's one of the better things you can do for your skin. There are other therapies out there like laser treatments, and there's, you know, different types of lasers, ablative and non-ablative lasers with different effects. But ultimately, most people in the space who have tried everything will say that the microneedling and the platelet rich plasma is actually the best out there, and it's less expensive than using the lasers. Typically, that's what anecdotally I tend to hear.
Everybody talks the abbreviated PRP. You know, they say, "Oh, it's PRP." Great. Yep. You know, so that's what I've heard. So that's good to hear from someone like you. So, stem cell therapy.
So when it comes to these hallmarks of aging, stem cell exhaustion is one of them. So eventually, your stem cells start dying off, or those that are still alive are just not as good at making replicas of the cells anymore. So you get some, you know, cells that have mistaken identity or DNA damage and so on. And so they don't perform as well as they would. The idea, though, is that stem cells are able to, as I just alluded to, they can create brand new copies of your cells. And so essentially, if you're doing that, you can then repair tissue better. You can repair, by extension, organs better, and then those organs can function better. The problem with stem cell therapies is that there is a lot of snake oil in that space. A lot of what's being done is not actually effective. A lot of it's amateur. There are very few companies that are actually doing this in a very accountable, safe, and effective way. The last I heard, the best companies weren't actually even in the United States. You had to leave the U.S. to access them. Yeah. I believe in like the Caribbean and in Mexico. There might be more locations now. This was about 2 years ago that I last spoke about this topic, but there's a lot of promise there. It's just that there's a lot of hype and you have to be careful with what you're getting and check the science behind what the clinician is promising.
But in the incipient stages, you've already heard good things about it, where it could just be a matter of time for the U.S. to catch up to that.
Oh, yes. There's definitely potential with stem cells and what they can do for rejuvenating our organs. Yeah.
So these are the things that I've brought up, but they're simplistic. But now Novos, they probably touch upon this and plus a lot more, right? So where can you shed light on some other things that I'm missing? I'm assuming that what's the full scope of what Novos does, and what are some things that we haven't talked about that are, maybe they'll be of interest?
Sure. So Novos as a company, we're a public benefit corporation. This was another thing I decided I wanted to do years ago after a lot of self-reflection, was to create a company that didn't only have to focus on maximizing profit, but could also do things in the public interest, even if it wasn't necessarily the most profitable thing to do. As a result of that, we offer a lot of free resources to the general public through Novos. And so what are those things? I'll mention them as I tell you exactly what Novos is. So I like to think of what Novos as a stool with three legs to it. One leg is formulations. So these formulations are the very first formulations created to address all of the hallmarks of aging simultaneously. So there were 9 of them. Actually, just 2 months ago, the original authors of that paper, almost a decade ago, came out with a new paper, and they identified 3 new hallmarks. So there's 12 of them now. And Novos Core, our foundational formula, which is patent pending, it is the first formula created to address those 12. It addresses all 12 of those hallmarks. And then we have other products that will come down the line. But I mentioned Novos Boost before as well, which is the NMN. So it's Novos Core and Novos Boost as our formulations right now. The second leg of the stool is testing. So for testing, the paid for version is what's called an epigenetic test. Epigenetic tests will tell you your biological age, which I mentioned earlier. There are many biological age clocks or tests out there, and they are not all equal. And so you might hear someone who's 40 say, "Oh, I'm biologically only 22. You have to question what test they use, and even whether it was blood or saliva based, and what lab ran the test. We are partnered with a world authority lab in this space. And the test that we offer in the Novos Age product, there's 3 outputs that we provide you with. But the main one that I want to focus on is called the Dunedin Pace Clock. This was created by scientists at Duke University and Columbia University. They followed 1,000 people from practically birth until now, which is about, they're about 55, 56 years old now, and tracked everything from like if there was trauma in their childhood to their grip strength, their white matter in their brain, their blood tests, if anyone has a disease, anyone passed away, dozens of markers over the years, and then use this to create the algorithm, which looks at your epigenome. I keep saying epigenome. What is that? That is which genes are turned on and off. It's the layer that sits on top of your genes and decides which ones to turn on. Sometimes that's a bad thing. Maybe it turns on destructive genes, and sometimes it's a good thing. And so there are patterns to this. And so based on all of this data, they're able to then look at your epigenome and say whether you are, you know, aging very quickly or aging very slowly. So this algorithm tells you your pace of aging. The average would be 1 year biological aging for 1 year of chronological time. But some people are aging faster. Maybe they're smoking a pack a day and not, you know, physically active. And some people are aging slower. I got my results. My results were 31% slower, which the lab executive had said was the best result that they've ever seen. So I like to think that what we're doing at Novos and the advice that we're giving is on point. In fact, just this week, they have this rejuvenation Olympics that they've set up where it's like everyone submits their results. And there's someone in there who was just in the press a lot for trying to be 18 years old again. And he's spending $2 million a year on trying to, you know, do that. And one of our customers has a better result than him simply from taking our products, not doing anything else for their life. So
I'm so curious about that $2 million cost, because what could they possibly be spending on that what would, you know, I guess, yeah.
Well, a lot of testing, to your point about stem cells, I believe he's inhaling stem cells through his nostril to try to get them to his brain.
Validity to that?
It's so early. There's a company that claims there's validity to it, and some research behind it. But I think it's on the risky end of the spectrum that I personally wouldn't do it myself, right? Because whatever's getting through the blood-brain barrier and into your brain, like any contamination or if anything goes wrong, I don't even want to take the chances with that. But that's just me. And maybe if I knew more about the research, I would be more open to it.
Did we get into the third leg, or were we all just on leg two?
The third. So within that second leg, we offer, to the point of free things for public benefit. We also offer two things. One is a questionnaire on the website, which will give you a longevity score based on your lifestyle. And then after you take that, you will then get links to articles for how to improve these different aspects of your life that will be conducive to longevity. The second thing that we offer for free is called Face Age. So if you go to novoslabs.com/face-age, you can take a selfie of yourself. Mm-hmm. And then through artificial intelligence trained on a data set of more than 12 million people's photographs, we can tell you how old your face looks and your skin health markers like pore size, redness, wrinkling, eye, like under eye bags and so on. And then again, of course, we're not going to leave you with that. We always provide articles and information for how to improve this. 90% of the advice we give has nothing to do with Novos products, right? It's mostly like diet or lifestyle or other products you can get that are not ours and we have no affiliation or kickbacks for. Only 10% of it is our product when it makes sense to present our product. And the third leg is essentially an offshoot of what I just said, which is knowledge. So there's a lot of education that the public needs about health and longevity. This is the most rapidly evolving field of biology is longevity medicine. It's expected to be the largest industry of all time in the next 10 years or so. And a lot of people, when they hear things like you can slow down your pace of aging or possibly even reverse your biological age, people say, oh no, this can't be possible. It's fake. It's like the number of times we see on Facebook comments, like only Jesus can decide how old I am, right? Or when I'm going to die. Well, that's not actually true. Like if you look at antibiotics, right? People were dying in their mid 30s on average. And after antibiotics, people got an extra 20 plus years added to their lifespans, right? That was science fixing a problem. And it's the same now. This is just the 21st century equivalent to that.
Yeah. And the number one probably that you'll probably agree is like people say, well, just live your life. And it's like, well, this is living your life. It's there's no, that's like comparing and say, well, I don't want to use that damn telephone because it's just a weird contraption. You know, it's like the same thing, you know, it's just science and it's just evolving and that's all there is to it.
Yes. And I feel like those same people will say, like, if you're eating like a salad with salmon and quinoa or something, they'd say, just enjoy yourself, as if that's not an enjoyable meal to eat, right? Like they might very much like to have the fried chicken and pizza and so on. And listen, every so often it's nice to indulge, but I actually feel better and like how I feel, my energy levels, my stomach comfort, how light I feel and so on. And I like the taste of these foods that I am living my life. I would argue I'm living my life more because it enables me to be more physically active and to rest better, sleep better, and to lower my risk of disease so that this lasts a long time. So I think it's a perspective and I'll respect that perspective, but I think it's in some ways it's off base and not really understanding why we do what we do. And it's not really a sacrifice. It's actually investing in ourselves. When you invest in yourself, you get a better outcome in the long term.
I concur. And there's also levels too. You know, you could be the person that, like, you know, says, look, I do this once a month and I look forward to that. You know, it's like, even, you know, a vegan might say no to this, but it's like, you know, to each its own. It's like, look, I do it once a month. I love that ribeye steak once a month, but the rest of the time I'm being like, you know, I'm doing Novos and I'm doing, you know, it's like, well, you know, and there's not, you could set your own standard. Right.
So yeah. Exactly.
A couple more interesting things I have to ask you, because this is fun stuff. Heat and cold, you know, the ice plunging and over 185 degrees saunas, not the infrared because it doesn't hit you over 185. What's in your journey and your science that you've looked into? What's the data say about that?
Yeah. So for heat, there's benefit. You have to consider how hot it gets and just safety, because every so often you do hear about those people who they go into these, you know, 200 degree plus saunas, like the Russian saunas, and then they pass away in them. They get dehydrated or their heart rate gets too high and they have an aneurysm or a heart attack. So with that aside, there are health benefits to it. Like, for example, the production of heat shock proteins, a cardiovascular strain on your body. Like you go into one of these saunas and your heart is pumping the same as it would be if you were going out for a jog. And so you're getting a lot of those cardiovascular benefits as well. So in a sense, it is actually giving you the benefits of exercise, not all of them, because you're not getting the same muscle stimulation as you would get from physical exercise. So if I had to choose between the two, I would say do the physical exercise. If you don't have the time or you're lazy or you just want to take it easy for today, the sauna can give you a lot of those benefits. And then a question of, well, what about both? There is some evidence that shows that if you exercise and you do a sauna, you can get additional benefits from the sauna as well. Now for the cold exposure, like cold plunges and stuff like that, from what I most recently heard about that is that if you exercise and then immediately go into a cold plunge, it can actually reverse some of the benefits of the exercise. So you don't want to do a cold plunge immediately after your exercise. If you're doing a cold plunge separately from your exercise, then there can be some benefits to it. It can lead to brown fat, which is a metabolically active form of fat that your body produces from very cold weather exposure. It can produce some you know, neurotransmitters that will lead to just alertness, right? Like, of course, you'll get a cortisol shock from that freezing cold, but will also then like increase dopamine and norepinephrine. These are like excitatory neurotransmitters that keep you alert and motivated and in a good mood and so on. So, and some would argue that it could potentially have a positive effect on your immune system by like training your body and being exposed to this cold intermittently like that.
What other type of stresses are there? Because from what I've read is that the stress, this is a healthy stress on the body. I'm paraphrasing. What's the science as far as the stress? And also, are there any other stressors that you found out about that you discuss?
Yeah. So what you're referring to is a concept known as hormesis. So hormesis is the idea of when you put a moderate amount of stress on your cells, on your organs, on your body, that in many cases the body then comes back stronger. The best case in point example of this, and to your question of whether other stressors you can do, is physical exercise. Take weightlifting, for example. When you're lifting a weight, you're causing damage to the muscle tissue. And then the body says, I don't want to be damaged. If this is going to happen regularly, I need to make the tissue stronger to prevent this damage. And so it comes back, it repairs the damage, and then it also builds a little bit more. And you keep doing this over time, you're getting stronger, you're lifting more heavy, and then the body is continually adapting and getting stronger and stronger. That's hormesis. You can also experience hormesis from fasting, going an extended period of time without eating. You can experience hormesis through molecules, so specific ingredients. For example, pterostilbene that I mentioned earlier, which happens to be in Novo's core, that has some hormetic properties to it. In fact, many phytonutrients, so these are nutrients within vegetables, within plants, that the plant has for survival to try to prevent like insects from being able to eat it or smaller animals from eating it. They're slightly toxic, but that toxin then leads the body to actually become stronger and release its own antioxidants, for example. So you'll oftentimes hear people who are like carnivore
fanatics. Absolutely. Yeah. This is a very interesting subject in your field too. These defense chemicals he talks about.
Yeah. So oftentimes people will say like, well, you know, these are chemicals and they're poisonous and you therefore don't want it. And it's not that simple. You actually want that small dose of the quote unquote poison, because it actually then leads to a healthier outcome for the body. For example, a lot of molecules known as antioxidants are not technically antioxidants. So a true antioxidant is a molecule that, for example, like vitamin C, typically, sometimes vitamin C can actually act as an oxidant, but vitamin C will intercept an oxidative particle and prevent it from causing oxidation, right? A free radical, essentially. It intercepts the free radical, and then it prevents that damage from taking place. There are certain molecules that are referred to as antioxidants that are not actually technically behaving that way. They're actually slightly toxic, but hormetically toxic, that our bodies then produce higher levels of our own endogenous or internal antioxidants like glutathione or superoxide dismutase to then essentially be in a better place, a better condition for any other toxic insult that we might be encountering, whether it be cigarette smoke or pollution or alcohol or food with unhealthy particles in it. So it's enabling your body to be able to defend itself better. So it's not so simple as saying, well, something is slightly toxic. You have to look at the effect on the body. There are certain molecules that are just terrible for the body regardless, right? Like you don't want to have a lot of lead, for example, right? Even if it's found in nature, you just don't, you know, it's a natural element, but you don't want high levels of that. But then there are others that are actually favorable.
All right. Two interesting questions here is like, what is something that is surprisingly that you think is healthy that is not, what food is actually truly not healthy for you that you might surprise us? And then also, what fruit is healthy that would surprise us?
That's a good question. what is healthy that you would think is unhealthy? Well, let's start with,
are there any vegetables or, you know, any foods that say, you know, a lot of people think these are healthy, but they're actually, I'm not talking about like a grapefruit if you're on a statin, you know, because you can't have grapefruit on a statin. I'm talking about things that, right. you know, if you're naturally healthy, you know, it's like, actually, this is not as healthy as people think.
You know, nothing is coming to my mind right now. I'm sure there are multiple that will come to my mind, but on the spot right now.
It's pretty much what we know, though. It's like, eat your vegetables, eat your fruit. Most of them are okay. Don't listen to Carnivore MD. Those defense chemicals are actually going to metastasize. That's a wrong word. Like,
all right,
form in your body.
A couple have come to my mind. Now that the spotlight's on you and you're talking, then they popped in my mind. All right. So one would be, to that point about carnivore MD, is having very high levels of meat, of basically only eating meat, right? So if you're only eating meat, you are stimulating this biological pathway known as mTOR, mechanistic target of rapamycin. And mTOR pathway is a growth pathway. And this growth pathway is one that is chronically activated in modern society because we're always eating and we always have plenty of protein and carbs in our diet. But historically, throughout evolution, there were periods of feast and famine. And so mTOR would be stimulated during feast and it would downregulate during famine. And that's part of the reason why fasting works and why time-restricted feeding works. And so if you are, now mTOR is also correlated with things like cancer, because if you're constantly in this growing state and constantly producing, the body is not, it's not cleaning up the mess as much, right? Through processes known as proteostasis, things like autophagy and apoptosis are not taking place as much. And so there is value in not stimulating mTOR. Now, I've heard him once say, the Carnivore MD, say something about like, how, like, if you exercise, you want to stimulate mTOR and so on. And yeah, I agree with that. Like if you're lifting heavy weights and your goal is to build some muscle, then sure, go ahead, have your protein shake after that. Right. The question is like, are you only eating meat and all day long eating meat and, constantly stimulating mTOR? That's probably not the most ideal, way to go for the sake of longevity. If you're a bodybuilder, and your goal is to compete in the IFBB, then go ahead. Right. But, for most of us and for the subject of this podcast, no. Another one is, dairy, specifically milk. So milk not only also stimulates mTOR, but it also has, a molecule in it called galactose. And galactose is literally used in scientific studies to accelerate aging in animals. So they'll take the galactose and they will feed that to the animals to speed up their aging. It's a relatively small amount, but it's in the milk. And if you're consistently drinking milk, you're taking this in. When you ferment the milk into cheese, the galactose goes down significantly, just like lactose goes down significantly. So cheese, believe it or not, is not as bad as compared to just drinking the milk. And then there's also, you know, concerns about like hormones that could be in milk. And, you know, ultimately milk is for baby calves, right? Mm-hmm. And, or for humans, baby humans, right? Yeah. I mean, how many other animals are drinking milk when they're in adulthood? You don't see it. You only see the babies doing it. And there's probably reason for it because it's really good for growth. But then you get to a certain point where it's not necessarily good for you anymore.
Fantastic. This is really fun stuff. Went a little over because I just was very intrigued by everything. I'm sure you get that a lot, actually.
Yes. Oftentimes. Yeah, this was a 30-minute podcast and we're at 44 minutes.
But that's great. Yeah. I mean, look, I find it, you know, really interesting. So, Chris, please tell everybody how they could find out more about you.
Sure. So novoslabs.com. Or at Novos on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, you name it. We're on all of the networks. On that website, you can learn more about the products, but you can then also like take the tests like face age or the survey. the blog, we have more than 120 articles written by PhDs and MDs on the subject matter. So just treat it as a resource. If supplements aren't your thing, at least leverage all of the information we're putting out. And then I also have a personal blog. It's slowmyage.com. And I'm on Instagram and Twitter as slowmyage. And there I just post about my biological results. So everything from the epigenetic clocks to other physiological markers like resting heart rate and heart rate variability and VO2 max and so on. And then like what I do in my daily routine to try to achieve these results.
Chris Mirabile.
Yes.
I got it right. All right.
You got
That's
it
good.
Right.
It just rolls right off the tongue. It's a very, great word. Great name. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing. This has been fantastic. And I look forward to having you back on again. You know, I actually feel like we just touched the tip of the iceberg on this. This is great stuff.
There's tons more to talk about.
I bet.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you so much.
That was vitality and longevity expert Chris Mirabile. As we crossed the corridors of time, I thought it would be good not just to talk about how we can feel better and live longer, but hey, let's have a nice quote about time. And this is a great one by a great person. It's paradoxical that the idea of living a long life appeals to everyone, but the idea of getting old doesn't appeal to anyone. Andy Rooney. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hanging out with you all on the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week, we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically, you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.